Hello everyone, thank you for joining me. Today I have Dr. Katrina Weary, who's a family medicine doc in CentraCare, and we will be talking about management of depression in primary care. Hello, Katrina.
Good morning.
So this is an upcoming presentation that we will have in two parts. Part one will be in December in the series Science of Practice in Medicine, of course, in which we'll be talking about epidemiology, screening, and diagnosis of depression. And then we have a part two in January about revolving around patient care itself. So my first question is, I think it's an interesting clue that you are a family medicine doc who is going to be talking about depression. And it's not a surprise that family medicine is at the forefront of coming across patients with depression. So how did you end up in depression from family medicine?
Well, I guess the same as all other family medicine physicians, because it's up there with all the other chronic disease management that we try to take care of for our patients. There's an estimate from the AAFP that, you know, about 75% of all of our visits with our patients include some degree of mental health conversations or diagnoses or management thereof. So my pathway to depression is the same as all other primary care pathway to depression.
My follow-up question to that is, and this I ask everybody who I talk to when it revolves around depression and anxiety in particular, it just cannot be that so many people have true depression and anxiety in the way of primary depression and anxiety. What I mean by that is, your dog dies, you lose your job, and you get a divorce on the same day, you're going to have reactive, normal depression. Versus primary depression, you are just wired that way, and no matter if you put you in a beautiful island with everything included, you're going to have depression. Do you have any thoughts about that yourself? Why is it becoming so and so pervasive?
Yes, it's true. I mean, sadness and feeling worried and anxious and frustrated are just on the spectrum of human emotion. And the diagnosis of depression, though, is very specific and particular. We have well-established criteria to diagnose depression, and not all sadness and feeling down equals depression. But we just do have a very high incidence of major depressive disorder. In fact, globally, there's about 5% of all people who carry the diagnosis of major depressive disorder, but the United States has an even higher percentage. So there is about one in every five adults in the U.S. that are diagnosed with major depressive disorder. And it's legitimate diagnoses that are made using those diagnostic criteria. So it does then become something very commonly seen in primary care, both that we screen and then ultimately diagnose, and then that we go on to treat.
That answer the questions that money doesn't buy happiness, because it's fascinating that the U.S. being so rich and so many resources, and it has this burden of sadness, and it makes you wonder, right?
I mean, yeah, it's an incredibly high number when you compare it to other countries. And certainly there have been epochs in time in our own lifetimes where we've seen a rise in depression numbers. And, you know, the most recent was during our pandemic, when we saw an increase across the board of almost all mental health diagnoses, depression being one of them too.
Okay, so that's, of course, a huge topic unto itself, and I really like to chat about that. But how are we doing in depression care in CentraCare, in particular at the forefront, finding it and putting the patients in the right track?
We are primarily doing that in primary care, and, you know, the incidences and the outcomes of depression management for all healthcare organizations are a matter of public record. And so we can compare how we're doing to other areas, even in Minnesota, other institutions. And comparatively, we may be not quite as up to the goals that we'd like to be. So I think this is a good time to really start talking about depression and how we can diagnose and manage it appropriately.
Do you think in real life that has to do with the overwhelming number of things that a primary care force has to do on a daily basis, and you just cannot focus entirely and help
Yeah,
out patients?
I think that probably has a big component to it. I think there's some unique aspects of how we deliver care here in central Minnesota too. We know, across the United States, there are not enough primary care providers for the needs, and then that's even more noticeable for mental health providers, but in particular in Minnesota, and then even further down in the rural areas, that we have even less resources. So it could be a representation of how much more difficult, how many other barriers we need to overcome to be able to truly help our patients here in the rural area.
I always try to give something to the primary force, and in this case in particular, family medicine, PEDS, OB, to make the workload manageable. So what tools are available for center care that perhaps we are not using as much as we should, beyond metrics, right? I mean, tangible stuff, referral, e-consults.
Yeah, I think we could even start just looking in our own primary care clinics. We have embedded integrated behavioral health providers in our family medicine clinics who are generally some of the first line folks that we go to for help. And it could even be help in diagnosis, it could be help in therapies, it could be help in, following to see how our treatments are working. And then again, in our own clinics, we are able to use our RNs to help offload some of the follow-ups, when we're initiating a medication and we need to know the response to treatment and follow-ups for being able to titrate treatment if we're using medication. And then outside of our own clinics, you had mentioned actually, a couple different pathways that we can use with our psychiatric and psychological providers. So, the e-consult was one that you mentioned, which allows for a very specific review of a brief question. Generally, it can be medication related. And then one of the psychiatric providers is able to give recommendations about that. And it's a simple referral that's entered. And it can be a very specific question. Hey, I want to start an SSRI on this patient that has these diagnoses and these primary symptoms. What would you recommend or not recommend?
This is an
This is the e-consult.
e-consult,
That's right.
and it's called.
You can put it when you enter the referral, it's under the umbrella of the behavioral health referral.
Okay. So tell me, what's your role in all of this? Because you're certainly interested and you have a role on this.
Yeah, I'm hoping to just be able to help promote and assist our primary care providers in feeling much more comfortable in their role as truly the first line of treatment for the common mental health disorders, including depression. And I want to help our primary care providers feel like they actually do have resources that they can use, despite knowing that we are in a resource lower area. We do have mechanisms set up where we can feel supported and we can feel like we have resources that we need to adequately help our patients. So I think that's my primary goal.
You're describing a solution, and when there's a solution, there was a problem. What's the problem? How did you find the problem?
I think one of the first clues is that we are looking at how we compare to other healthcare organizations in looking at our outcomes for patients, and we're just not getting to the place that we want and the place that we need for our patients. So I think that helped to identify our problem. And then, of course, it doesn't help to say, hey, we have a problem, and then not be able to work on anything with solutions. So thankfully, I think we have some good solutions that all of us can become more familiar with and start utilizing in our practice.
And this is what you'll be talking about in one of your two presentations, correct?
That's right.
I hate the word metrics, but unfortunately, this is the only one that would reflect that? What are the metrics you are seeing that reflect that we are doing poorly, right?
When we compare with our value-based contracts within that system to the other organizations, our rates of remission for the treatment of depression are not quite as high as we'd like to see.
Okay.
So, and part of that may be that we're not accurately diagnosing depression, right? Maybe our denominator is actually bigger than it really is. Maybe we're over-diagnosing, or we're not appropriately making the right diagnoses. And then, you know, the other part could be, well, maybe we just aren't fine-tuning our treatment enough to help get our patients there, to help get them to remission rates.
Could you tell me about the context in which you're achieving this? I mean, do you have administrative support? Who do you work with? Do you have protected time? What are your tools?
Yeah, so we do have a depression committee that's comprised of both now primary care with myself and then also psychiatry and our behavioral health components, mm-hmm. in which we are specifically looking at these metrics to, number one, make sense of them, and then number two, try to help find solutions. And I think most recently, primary care was brought into that whole sphere because of the recognition of the amount of work that primary care does specific for depression.
Do you have some names of people that work in this committee?
Yeah, so Dr. Schmidt is our one of our psychiatrists, and then there's a list of all of our other behavioral health specialists that are in that group too.
Okay, we have another guest joining us today, Dean Kirkaby. I hope I'm pronouncing the last name right.
Close enough, Kirkaby. Yes.
Hi, Dean, how are you?
Good, very good, thank you.
So I'll let you introduce yourself and what your role in this huge topic of mental health, specifically depression, is.
Right. So I'm a pop health consultant. I work within the pop health department. Our focus is on the well-being of our entire population of patients across the system. I've been involved in the Depression Steering Committee for quite some time, maybe 5-6 years now. And we really look at how we're performing within specific areas of the organization and how we can translate that into success if we have areas doing, you know, better job than others, and spread that good work across the system.
I wanted to get your perspective of what was the committee like, how has it grown, and where you see it coming and when?
Yeah, there's always been a good behavioral health component to that committee, pretty rock solid, so some continuity there. We've got a group now that have been there for a couple of years, and Dr. Weary has just recently joined us as the co-chair of that committee. So Dr. Weary and Dr. Schmitz co-chair that group, and we really are taking kind of a fresh look at depression care and center care, taking the focus maybe off of behavioral health leadership and putting it back into primary care's lap, mm-hmm. Where, as Dr. Weary had mentioned, you know, 75% of all your primary care encounters have some behavioral health component to it.
Have you subsequently seen some favorable results out of it?
You know, it's probably a little too soon to tell on that forefront, but we do see the numbers, especially in remission rates, kind of ebb and flow over the years. Mm-hmm. They've been pretty consistent for the system, but in certain clinics, they do a really good job sometimes and not at other times. So again, we try to focus on how we can spread that good work across the system. And I think we should look at some other measures as we move forward. You know, maybe are we decreasing like our PHQ-9 scores by 50%? You know, maybe we'll never get those remission rates, but how can we measure our patients to say that they're doing a much better job? You know, is it compliance to taking diabetes medicine and being successful in other chronic disease care?
How would you define we have achieved it? We achieved it. Let's stay this course. Let's keep this going. That's a bad one. Bad question. You could be, or a tough question, I should say.
That is a tough question. The simple answer is an outcome measure that all healthcare organizations are measured on. It's remission rates.
Okay.
It's a very difficult number to achieve. Your patient is put onto this measure when they have a high PHQ-9 score. And the goal, the simple goal of that measure is to get below a 5 on subsequent PHQ-9 at a 6-month time frame and at a 12-month time frame. So it's the measure we have. It's probably not the best measure, but it's the measure everybody has, so we can compare apples to apples.
Mm-hmm. One last question that I had. This may apply for CentraCare or not. You know, when you're in large healthcare entities, and I will put CentraCare as a mid-size in that context, you see typically the Center for Cancer Care, the Center for Cardiovascular Care, and psychiatry, unfortunately, is such a monster issue that it's a condition by itself, but it also taints mm-hmm. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, taints everything else. Because if you're depressed, you don't feel like caring for your cardiovascular disease or everything. It ruins everything in a way of all your other medical problems. Do you think we are giving it enough emphasis, like to put in the, like I would call it a center for excellence in psychiatric care, or we should do more in infrastructure?
Right. Well, I'm glad you brought those two departments in particularly. They both have IBH providers embedded within those departments.
Okay.
And you're absolutely right. Depression care and cancer care, depression care and heart disease, depression care and any of the chronic diseases often go hand in hand. I think you got to take it kind of from a holistic approach. And again, I'm a layman, but being able to work together is something that I don't know how we measure other than interviewing the patient and knowing that we have success.
I would like to have some closing thoughts from you and after that, Dr. Wary, on the following. It has reached a point, I do infectious disease, as you know, that I get surprised when I see somebody and in the medication list, I do not see an SSRI. There is an elephant in the room that we are not addressing. This is not just out of nowhere a genetic change. And to me, is we are doing something wrong in society outside healthcare. What are your thoughts on that? Why do you think we have this crisis? Why do we have such a crisis and overwhelming number of people with depression? What do you think is going on?
You know, you had said earlier in this conversation that you know, money doesn't buy happiness. Mm-hmm. Is there an issue within the United States with pressure and just lifestyles? Maybe so. And maybe it is endemic to the nation. But I also wonder if Dr. Wary had mentioned, you know, are we over diagnosing? Are we being too reliant on the PHQ-9 score to say this patient has depression? When they may not be having, a really huge impact to their life, from a negative standpoint. And it is maybe sadness. It's not depression. I don't work in the front lines with the patients, so I can't tell you if that's the case or not. But as a person that looks at the scores, the numbers, the stats, I wonder if there isn't some of that as well.
How about you, Katrina?
I think I guess it's not as surprising to me that we are having increasing rates of depression, because I see it also in the setting of increasing rates of all other chronic illnesses, increasing rates of diabetes and cancers and cardiovascular disease. And as we talked about before, that all of those kind of, you know, go hand in hand. We know that there are high comorbid rates of depression with other chronic disease. And the other thing, too, that I always wonder is that, are we just now culturally getting better in the United States about talking about depression? And I think, you know, as family medicine, I get to see people from birth to death. And so I can see the difference in my octogenarians and how they talk about how they feel and what they experience versus my adolescent patient who maybe feels that they are able to better express what they're experiencing. And I think maybe there's a cultural shift as well, in that as Americans, we're better able to recognize that we can actually talk about our experiences. And maybe that contributes to some degree to the higher recognition of depression.
Those are great points, Mike.
I like that answer much better. I like Katrina's answer
no,
much better.
I think they're both different views. I'll offer my view. I think an eternal problem is the offer of achievements doesn't allow you to be in the moment, whether they are technological, states of mind, mm-hmm. social positions. You're never happy where you are because you could have the next phone, you could have the next car, your kids could do the next sport. So you're never happy in the moment. So by definition, you get used to not be fulfilled, satisfied. And it sounds trivial, but when you pay attention, I vividly remember my grandparents and my mom's side, and a lot of people were poor, but they were happy where they are. That's it. Don't dream about getting anything else because you're not going to get it. That's it. So you learn to be happy with mm-hmm. what you have. And now you see in a kid, they get a toy, they throw it away, next one, they throw it away, next yeah. one. So you're never there. But anyway.
Yeah. I think that correlates mm-hmm. with what we've seen with some of the highest rates of suicide is in our adolescent females, which it just mm-hmm. is completely against what suicide used to be. Suicide used to be the adult male. And now it's our adolescent female, and our adolescent female has just nonstop mm-hmm. access to all information. Every click of the button that she uses is either a dopamine rush or some degree of self-belittling, and it's a constant onslaught for these girls. So I think you're right, Dr. Mincy's, to some degree, right? Like, we're just never satisfied.
It's just devastating.
Yeah.
To see. Thank you both so very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.